es una historia de una bella dama, a la cual maltratamos, pero el igual ella nos ama. Se preocupa por nosotros y nos provee de alimentos, y nosotros proveemos sus peores sufrimientos. Ella nos grita en silencio que no le hagamos tanto daño, y no necesita que seamos hoy su dueño. Ella nos cuida, aunque para ella solo somos extraños o simplemente pequeños con referencia a su tamaño. No sé si ella soporte la actitud más bruta o la acción más torpe que tiene el hombre cuando le da tantos golpes sin que su dolor importe. Lo ultrajamos, violamos sin dar ningún aporte. ¿Qué pasará con ella si en el futuro no hay nada que la conforte? No hay nada que la conforte. Esto es un SOS por ella y por ustedes y por el que crece. Esto es un SOS por ese sol que brilla cuando...
Welcome to this special video and audio edition of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Our guest today is Tamir Poris, who is the Vice Minister in charge of Middle Eastern Affairs. Welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, Tamir.
Thank you, Cindy.
Oh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, and the reason I wanted to have you here to be on the show and in the documentary is to really expose the differences of the foreign policy of the empire, which is the United States, of course, and the foreign policy of Venezuela. My first question to you, it will be very, very easy. How many wars of aggression is Venezuela currently in the Middle East?
None.
Okay. And how many wars of aggression is Venezuela currently in anywhere?
None.
And how many wars are Venezuela currently in?
Zero.
Zero. Okay, that was very easy.
Well, probably one.
One?
War and aggression on poverty.
The war on poverty. Well, you know, we don't like to call that a war in the United States because that's something that never ends. And then the resources are just privatized, like the war on drugs, and which is a similar case down here in South America, especially. I know you're not the chargé for South America, but there are border skirmishes along the Colombian border, are there not?
No, well, we don't have skirmishes between Venezuelan army and the Colombian army. Mm-hmm. What we have is a very large border, mm-hmm. Which is about 2,000 kilometers long. Mm-hmm. And as you know, in the United States, Colombia has gone through an internal war for about 60 years. Mm-hmm. War between the government, the guerrilla movements, the paramilitary, who have been struggling in an internal conflict for 60 years. And of course, Venezuela as a neighboring country has been suffering of the consequences of that war. Our policy has always been that we have to solve the origins of the problem. That means we have to reach peace, mm-hmm. in Colombia, and which is why we're opposing all the policies that tend to intensify the conflict in Colombia. But of course, from time to time, it's inevitable that the Venezuelan people living in the borderline, that the they suffer from the consequences, be it because there are skirmishes on the Colombian side, because one of the parties goes through the border to the Venezuelan side, or the most tremendous and dramatic consequences of that conflict, and that is that there are currently 3 million Colombian citizens living in Venezuela, because they're running away from the conflict and they come to Venezuela to live in peace and normally.
Refugees.
Yeah, that's right.
Those sort of. Well, this is a little bit off the subject that I brought you here, but it's really not. George Bush, of course, Chavez called him the devil. Most of the people in the world agreed with that. But George Bush wasn't as aggressive towards Venezuela and South America as Obama seems to be. I mean, Obama has reactivated the Fourth Fleet. He has put a lot of troops in Haiti after the earthquake, which seems to be excessive for controlling crime that would happen after such a natural disaster. we have troops now in Colombia, and we're planning on sending more troops to Colombia. It seems to me that, and one of the reasons I felt it was so urgent to come down here and do this, it seems, of course, that the United States under the Obama administration is intensifying the hostilities in this part of South America. And it seems like with the drones flying over, I think the drones and the planes were coming from maybe Colombia, but maybe also Aruba, flying over Venezuelan airspace to provoke some kind of reaction from Venezuela.
Well, our reaction is always a political one. Mm-hmm. I mean, Venezuela is not an aggressive country, and we're not looking for having a war with anybody. But you're right. Let's remember, nevertheless, that during the Bush administration, we had a coup d'etat in Venezuela in 2002 that was, you know, organized and promoted by the Bush administration. Yeah. So, but it's true that we weren't really surprised mm-hmm. by it because we knew who we were dealing with.
Exactly.
Now, as the President Chavez has said, we have this enigma of the two Obamas. At the beginning and during the campaign, I mean, we were very much excited about the outcome of that election because we tend to believe what the politicians say. So we truly believe that there was a possibility of having a change in the foreign policy, at least. That's what concerns Venezuela, of the United States. And during the first months of his administration, we had this, you know, what we at the time believed to be a historical moment of President Obama attending Trinidad, the Summit of the Americas, attending each and every meeting, being humble, speaking to everyone respectfully, etc., and even to President Chavez, and they had the time to exchange some words. But since then, let's remember, we had in June a coup d'etat in Honduras.
And that was one thing I left out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Second, in July, we had 7 military bases installed in Colombia. And they have been saying that this is to fight against drug trafficking, but given the characteristics of those bases, anyone can know that that's not the final purpose or goal. And of course, Venezuela being criticized, attacked on a daily basis by spokespersons of the Department of State of the United States, being criticized by military spokesmen on a daily basis, once again, of course, we tend to believe that this is a step given by the U.S. administration to threaten Venezuela because we're a rich, oil-rich country, strategic country for the United States, and because the government of Venezuela doesn't comply to the instructions given by Washington. So, of course, we still have hope. I mean, we do believe in the American people, in their capacity of reacting, the capacity of putting pressure on their government. We still believe that maybe President Obama is somebody more reasonable than President Bush. But so far, what we have had doesn't mean that we're having a change. The policy of the empire is intensifying in South America. And I don't know. I don't know the reasons of that. That's a problem of the American people and the American society to solve. But the truth, the reality is that we have had no change in our region.
Thank you for the explanation of what the empire is doing here in South America. I think you might have a little more confidence in the American people than I do, because there actually was a coup d'etat a long time ago in the United States of the ruling class elite and their absolute control of the propaganda And so that's why this documentary is so important to get to the United States to tell the truth and why it's so urgent. But you are the vice minister in charge of Middle Eastern affairs, which of course is, I think, where a lot of the U.S. resources and the U.S. empire is being used, in my opinion, incorrectly. Now, Afghanistan and Iraq obviously have U.S. puppet governments installed there. But Venezuela, I think, has relations with Iran. And, of course, the rhetoric in the United States towards Iran has been very, very hostile. And they're working in collaboration with the United States, of course, to put tougher sanctions on Iran because they say Iran is building, they want a nuclear bomb. And which, in fact, I think that might have been admitted to by Ahmadinejad. Can you tell that from a Venezuelan perspective of these relations between the empire, Iran, and Venezuela?
Yes. Well, from a Venezuelan perspective, Venezuela has relations with almost every country in the world. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. We do respect the national sovereignty of each and every country in the world. So the first big difference of view is that we do not go into a region to attack other countries to remove or install governments because Venezuela lives in the Venezuelan space. We have relationships with other countries, but we do not tend to tell them what they have to do or go into their territory to change the course of history or politics. Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very big difference. Mm-hmm. The second difference is that we do respect the right of every country to organize itself internally and externally as they think it's appropriate for their society. Therefore, we do have a relationship with Iran, as we do have relationships with other countries which are allies of the United States, like Saudi Arabia or, I don't know, even Colombia, this neighboring country in Venezuela. The problem is that the United States has been accusing Iran of some amazing things that, they tend to be selective in their accusations. Why don't we worry? I mean, how can we say that Iran is a threat to the United States if the United States has been occupying military, geostrategic space surrounding Iran? Right. We should remember that there are U.S. troops in almost every country that surrounds Iran. We should remember that a neighboring country of Iran, which is a strong ally of the United States, has developed a nuclear bomb.
And that country
would be Israel.
Right.
The nuclear program developed by Israel is not more legal than the eventual nuclear program that the United States is accusing Iran of being developing. So, it's a terrible misunderstanding. There's a huge propaganda, you know, given to the Western societies and in particular to the U.S. people. But why don't we say, let's try to do this game? Why don't we invert? Is that the word? Mm-hmm. Invert the terms of the accusation and say, well, let's worry for the Iranian people who are being threatened by the government of Israel, who has already a bomb, who has invaded Lebanon in 2006, and they are occupying illegally Syrian territory and Palestine. Mm-hmm. So you know, from time to time, we think that from a Venezuelan perspective, is amazing how the terms of the problem can be inverted, and of course, this crusade that is in progress in the Middle East against the countries that don't comply to the orders of the empire are presented to the U.S. Opinion and to the Western societies in such an amazing terms.
Right? Well, do you think that the hostile rhetoric, the imposition of sanctions, like you pointed out, which really hurt the people during the sanction period of the United States on Iraq, at least 2 million civilians died during that sanction period. And of course, all it does is strengthen nationalism and the resolve to survive under these horrible sanctions. Do you think that this hostility towards Iran is because of Israel? Is because Israel does feel threatened because Iran is a strong country that might be able to defend itself against aggressions of Israel? Or do you think it's because of natural resources that Iran has?
Both.
Both?
There is both reasons, yeah. Let's remember, and the U.S. people should bear in mind, the American people should bear in mind, the fact that in the whole Middle East, with the exception of Israel, Iran is probably the only country that elects their officials. I mean, there is a political system in Iran. Mm-hmm. Iran is a republic, and there are elections in Iran. They have seen through the media the huge protests that occurred last year, and at the same time, there is this contradiction. You know, they say you're living in a dictatorship in Iran, but at the same time, you're able to see that on the media, those protests. You can see that there are different tendencies struggling for power, and that they oppose each other in elections. If one of the tendencies is not happy because they lost, they go and protest. But I don't know if you could say the same thing for some other countries that I won't name, mm-hmm. That are very, very close to Iran and that are very close geographically, and that are very close allies to the United States. So Iran is a very complex society. I have been to Iran, you know, tens of times.
Well, and we have to also realize that whatever system is in place in Iran right now is a direct and indirect result of the United States overthrowing a democratically elected populist government in the early 50s. Absolutely. Of Mossadegh.
Yeah, of course. And nowadays, Iran is a highly productive economy, is a very complex society where people having, you know, different points of view live. You can find in Iran a strong industry. If you were to find a comparison, I would say that in the Middle East, Iran is the Brazil of South America. I mean, is a highly populated country, very well trained population, highly educated, with a complex political system, with a productive industry, and of course with a strong armed forces. So, of course, when you have an imperialistic plan for that region, Iran is an obstacle to your plans. And Iran has resisted the policies implemented by the United States in the last 30 years. But once again, you say Iran is threatening the U.S. interests. But, I mean, the United States are 1,000 kilometers away from that region. So Once again, who is coming to the other's region? I mean, the United States is occupying that region, and they say Iran is a threat. But Iranians live in that region, and it's normal that Iran has an importance in the region and has an influence in the region. So once again, from a Venezuelan perspective, we don't understand that language. We don't understand, and we don't share those values. And of course, we will support Iran in their right for developing their industry, including a nuclear program, if that nuclear program is not meant to develop a nuclear weapon. But once again, let's remember, those who have a weapon today in that region are not Iran. Israel has a nuclear weapon, and of course, Iran has the right to feel threatened by that nuclear weapon in Israel.
And I think one of the countries that you wouldn't mention, I'll mention Egypt. Egypt is, of course, a dictatorship. It's been a dictatorship for several decades now under, what's his name, Hosni Mubarak. And it gets one of the top amounts of military aid from the United States. And helps the United States with its oppression of the Palestinian people, being the border of Gaza right there. One of the reasons that I believe, and so it's a dictatorship, and it's a horribly oppressive society, you know, which I've been to. But nobody in the United States is putting sanctions on Egypt. That's a hypocrisy of the United States, of Saudi Arabia. A horribly oppressive, violent society also against the people. One of the reasons I think that the Middle East is so destabilized, and I'm not an expert, you are, of course, is our support of Israel in its oppression of the Palestinian people. And many U.S. regimes have said we're going to solve the Palestinian-Israeli problem. It's never, ever been solved. What is the Venezuelan position on Israel and Palestine?
First of all, Cindy, maybe as a citizen, I can, of course, have an opinion. Right. As a foreign policy official, and that's a very core difference between the United States and Venezuela, we do respect each and every country, mm-hmm. and we do respect Egypt as we respect Iran. Mm-hmm. We can have our own conceptions of how organizing a democratic society, but it is not to the Venezuelan government to say what the Egyptian government or the Iranian government should do to organize their society.
That's the difference of the United States. Iran, you have to organize your society this way, but Egypt, hands off. You can do whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
it's very selective. The United States is very selective on what dictatorships it supports and what dictatorships, I'm using air quotes for people who can't, dictatorships it overthrows.
Absolutely. And we do not have the definition of democracy and dictatorship that is to be applied to each and every people in the world. Right. We humbly try to build our own democracy, and we intend to do it in a sovereign way. The second thing is that, of course, Venezuela supports the struggle of the Palestinian people. And let me be very clear, because we have been accused of being anti-Semitic, right, because we do support the Palestinian cause. And because we have criticized the government of Israel for what we believe is just a horrendous oppression of the Palestinian people. First, in 2006, Israel attacked Lebanon once again illegally. Mm-hmm. I have a problem even with saying illegally, because I don't think there are legal attacks on anyone, but. Right. And when they say there were civilian casualties in those attacks, I mean, who has the right to kill someone else, and who has the right to say that this death is legitimate and the other is the death of an innocent person? I mean, there's just a military attack an illegal attack that should be condemned by each and every country in the world. But unfortunately, the Venezuelan government was almost alone in condemning that attack, and we withdrew our ambassador from Israel in 2006 when the Israelis attacked Lebanon with no reason. And the second moment was at the beginning of 2009 when Israel massacred the Palestinian people in one of the most horrendous war crimes that we have witnessed in these last decades. And that was the moment when Venezuela decided to expel the Israeli ambassador and, of course, to close our embassy in Tel Aviv and break our diplomatic relations with that government.
That was in Gaza, right?
That was in Gaza, yeah, when Israel attacked Gaza in January 2009. So, but what does it have to do with the Venezuelan government being anti-Semitic?
Right.
I mean, we respect the people of Israel, and we do hope that the people of Israel will be capable of changing the course of the of their government policy, foreign policy, or regional policy, or even military policy. And we do have a large Jewish community in Venezuela that we respect and we have relations with. But those are Venezuelans. I mean, they do not represent the government of Israel. And we do have the right to criticize that government, as we do have the right to criticize the actions of other governments when we think they're not fair and that they are applying to other countries and other peoples. Now, it's not a matter of internal affairs in Israel. So Venezuela supports the rights of the Palestinian people. We support the right of the Palestinians to have their own state, a sovereign state, not a half-sovereign state occupied military by Israel or other countries. And of course, once again, we believe that it's to the Palestinians to build their own state and to solve their internal problems. We do not believe that intervention of the United States, the European Union, or any other foreign power will bring the solution to that problem, because we believe that the key of the problem is to tell Israel and the government of Israel to withdraw from those illegally occupied territories. So, I mean, the key of the problem is a military occupation. And if the Western powers, United States and the European Union, agree with that policy and support Israel on their military policy in Palestine, we will not find a solution. So once again, the solution is the creation of a Palestinian state immediately. We do not have to wait that the Israeli government occupies more and more territory, and puts the solution each and every time, you know, a step further and a step far away from what the right solution should be to the Palestinian problem. So, once again, Venezuela supports the Palestinian cause, supports the creation of a Palestinian state, and we believe that we are in the right of criticizing the Israeli policy in the Middle East, supported by the United States and the European Union.
Do you? So we've already talked for 30 minutes. Do you have a couple more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, because we haven't even talked about Afghanistan yet, but this has been super interesting. Just one quick thing before we move to Afghanistan from Israel. So if you support a Palestinian state that's separate, sovereign from the state of Israel, do you also support an Israeli state
Absolutely.
In Palestine?
Absolutely.
The right for the Israeli state? Then, of course, that brings in all kinds of diplomatic nightmares about the right of return and how you're going to partition the state. But we'll move on, because if that happens, that's far in the future anyway. Barack Obama actually campaigned on a policy of increasing troops to Afghanistan. Now, I don't want to forget about Iraq, because Iraq is still an active military occupation. Even though we don't see the number of troops killed, U.S. troops killed in Iraq that we were seeing before, the Iraqi country is still unstable. Iraqi people are still being killed. Of course, Iraqi people have also been dispossessed of their land, their homes. The country has become almost like Israel and Palestine, with the walls and the partitions and the checkpoints that people have to go through to get. And of course, that is a crime to separate people, ethnically, religiously, and build walls to separate them. So before Barack Obama became president, Afghanistan was a forgotten occupation. Now that he's president, Iraq is a forgotten occupation. I don't want us to forget that. But the U.S. is having some severe attacks, military operations in Afghanistan, and of course the CIA is actively bombing, using drone technology in Pakistan. And we have seen U.S. troops being killed in Pakistan, where we're told there are no U.S. troops in Pakistan. But Barack Obama campaigned on the platform of sending more troops to Afghanistan. Since he's become president, he has tripled the troop commitment to Afghanistan. 2009 was the most deadly year for U.S. troops, NATO troops, and the people of Afghanistan. What is the official Venezuelan policy about Afghanistan? I think I know your answer, hearing what you've said about Iran and Palestine and Israel, but what would be the official, if you were the president of the United States, what would you do, Tamir?
I would be the first Latino president of the United States.
Then we could all celebrate.
But I would not be happy just because I'm the first, African American or Latino president.
As Obama said, the change is me. No, the change is not the person. The change has to be the policy.
Absolutely, because if we have the same policy with a different person, I mean, what are we changing for then?
Exactly.
So. The official policy of Venezuela and is to say there are no legitimate military occupations. I mean, some people might say, well, but in the international right, there are ways that the United Nations authorizes military occupations. But once again, when have we seen that such a military occupation is the solution of the problem it is meant to solve? Never. Of course, never. And in the case of Iraq and the case of Afghanistan, we just see that the things get worse and worse. Why? Because no matter what country you're talking about, when you're living under foreign military occupation, you can just intensify the fears, the anger, the sense of humiliation of people who just want to live normally in their sovereign country and organize their societies as they decide to. Even when they say, well, we came with a military occupation to overthrow a dictator, a national dictator, that is not your decision. It is not for the foreign government to decide that. And the people of that country, even in those situations, feel humiliated because it is your own nation and it's your own political problems. So you're not vindicated if somebody else comes and says, well, this is the solution and now you have to live with it. And, well, we see it in the news. We see it day by day. That doesn't bring a solution. That just intensifies the contradictions inside those societies. There's always, when a military occupation occurs, the support of a group against another, and we intensify, and they intensify the ethnic tensions, and that doesn't bring a solution. So the foreign policy of Venezuela is the military, the U.S. military, had to withdraw immediately from Afghanistan. They won't. You can't justify in the eyes of the world your own national security objectives by, you know, creating a war everywhere in the world. I mean, what kind of national security is that that needs the rest of the world to be dying, you know, in each and every corner? This is horrendous. I mean, the United States should interrogate itself, and the American people should ask themselves, why does our national security need the rest of the world to be killed or to be invaded? There's something wrong about it. So they should withdraw immediately from Afghanistan. I can't believe that a president that is talking about change can be elected on the program that promises the increase of the military occupation of a third country. And of course, the increase of military occupation will only result in more deaths, more casualties, more civilian killed, more American soldiers killed, and that's not the solution. That's just they say we in Latin America and the Latin American politicians are populists, that they're promising, making promises to the people of miracle solutions for their problems, but that's the most populist thing you can say to your country, that sending more troops will solve a problem that will only kill more American soldiers and more innocent people outside the United States.
Well, that just brings up so many things, like the U.S. now placing missiles in old Soviet bloc countries. You know, seems like they're, once again, isolating and increasing hostilities with what is now Russia. But one last question. The decade-plus military adventure that the old U.S. Soviet Union had in Afghanistan, of course, led to the eventual breakup and of the USSR, the military force that it was before. If the United States keeps on with these policies of occupation, Afghanistan is not Iraq. It's not going to be easily subdued. If it ever is easily, if it ever becomes subdued, if the USSR couldn't do it right on their border, how does the United States think they're going to do it? Do you think that this could eventually, if the United States does not change its policies, lead to the downfall of the U.S. military empire?
I hope so.
Me too.
Of course, I hope so. But I hope so that that the American people will take part in that. It is very important that things happen politically, that the result, if ever the U.S. military empire, and that doesn't mean the United States, that doesn't mean the American nation, that doesn't mean the American people, that means the aggressive military policies of the U.S. government, that means these military complex, industrial complex that rules the industrial policy of the United States.
It rules everything in the United States.
And if that happens, that will be as a result of the will of the American people. Mm-hmm. Because it's important that, you know, if the empire falls, that there's a project, that something comes out of it, and not just anarchy or whatever. So, and it's important also, as we support the national sovereignty of other countries, we also support the national sovereignty of the United States. And the U.S. people should be proud of their country and proud of the actions and policies of their government. So we believe that is very important. Now, coming to that point, yes, we're living a very, very tough economic times. The world and the whole capital system has been in a huge collapse, not seen since the crisis in 1929. Mm-hmm. And nobody knows where this huge crisis will lead us. So I believe that, of course, the U.S. government's money should be used not in financing this incredible and useless and absurd foreign military policy, but to finance the needs of the American people who are suffering because they're losing their homes or losing their jobs. And why not using part of that money to send it overseas, but not to send as guns, weapons, but as cooperation programs, as sovereign and respectful cooperation programs with different countries in the world to promote the well-being and the education and healthcare, etc., etc. I think that the people in the world would love to have that support from the wealthiest country in the world, and that the national security of the United States would be, better taken care of. By doing something like that than sending troops. So probably the empire will collapse, but I just hope that that collapse will lead to a different political reality in the United States.
Thank you, Tamir.
Thank you.
Well, you heard Tamir, people of the United States. He says we need to organize. We need to organize to have a healthy society instead of one that is so violent, and not just violent in our own country, but violence around the world. You've been listening to a special edition of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. My guest has been Tamir Poris, the Vice Minister of the Middle East. Been a very fascinating chat. Again, thank you, Tamir.
Thank you.
Es una historia de una bella dama, a la cual maltratamos, pero el igual ella nos ama. Se preocupa por nosotros y nos provee de alimentos, y nosotros proveemos sus peores sufrimientos. Ella nos grita en silencio que no le hagamos tanto daño, y no necesita que seamos hoy su dueño. Ella nos cuida, aunque para ella solo somos extraños o simplemente pequeños con referencia a su tamaño. No sé si ella soporte la actitud más bruta o la acción más torpe que tiene el hombre cuando le da tantos golpes sin que su dolor importe. Le ultrajamos, violamos sin dar ningún aporte. ¿Qué pasará con ella si en el futuro no hay nada que la conforte? No hay nada que la conforte. Esto es un SOS por ella y por ustedes y por el que crece. Esto es un SOS por ese sol que brilla cuando amanece. Ella se destruye por pedazos y usamos las manos y los brazos, no precisamente para darle un abrazo. Le sacamos la sangre, que es difícil conseguirle reemplazo. Sería diferente en el caso si nos fueran enseñado que el escuelo en la casa, que nuestra unión es más fuerte que un lazo. Como de madre e hijo, y le reprochamos cuando da un castigo porque no nos fijamos lo mal hijo que fuimos. Creemos que sobre ella tenemos dominio porque da los metales como la plata, plutonio, como el oro, el hierro y el inoxidable aluminio. Si en cada milenio que evoluciona el humano, ella fuera preferido que siguiéramos siendo simplemente unos simios, pero la tecnología aumenta y como que somos más bobos, destruyendo el planeta, contribuir es la meta al calentamiento del globo. Ella pide justicia y se condena el delito como homicidio y el robo. Es que ¿qué pretendemos? Acabar con un todo. Esto es un SOS, por ella y por ustedes, y por el que crece. Esto es un SOS, por ese sol que brilla cuando amanece. Esto es un SOS, por esos bosques verdes que se desaparecen. Esto es un SOS, por esas estrellas que ya no resplandecen. Al paso que la sociedad camina, el hombre cree que ya la domina, y lo que hace destruirle mucho más contamina. Solo oye esta rima, ¿qué pasará si ella muere? La vida se termina, pero no nos importa el precio de invadir sus espacios con rascacielos, industrias o tal vez con palacios y los centros comerciales. Es que no nos fijamos en los daños ambientales, señores de las transnacionales. No quitan la vista donde se inspira un artista, donde el lienzo conquista con el pincel y el óleo. Y a nosotros nos preocupa que se acabe el petróleo, sin olvidar episodios que ha dejado una guerra. He visto países como se llenan de odio por un pedazo de tierra. No puedo ser más obvio, nos da materias primas y también los metales para ideales sociales donde seamos iguales. Pero no, hacemos las bombas nucleares que borran ciudades y desintegran humano, que acaba con los bosques y extingue animales. El tiempo pasa y transcurren los años, y el hombre no descansa para hacerle más daño. Ella pide auxilio para que alguien acuda, pero nadie la escucha y mucho menos la ayuda. Se han preguntado, ¿será que ella es muda? Seguiremos cometiendo los mismos errores, sin saber que la estamos destruyendo, y sin darnos por enterado que ya los días están contados.
Listen.